able to navigate the interwoven branches of our native woodland with ease, and a practically unrivalled reputation for hunting ability, the goshawk is almost legendary as a bird of prey. They're nicknamed the Phantom of the Forest, after their ability to appear and disappear throughout their woodland habitat in a blur of grey and white feathers. Hello, I'm Tom Morath. I'm the Deputy Head of Living Collection at the Hawk Conservancy Trust. And whether it be hawks or harriers, caracaras or kites, I have a passion for birds of prey and understanding their place in the natural world. Our podcast, Nature's a Hoot, is a way to delve deeper into the world of these winged predators, to understand their natural history, their current status in the wild, and how we can support them through conservation efforts into the future. This time, I'm going to delve a little deeper into the mysterious world of the goshawk, an ultimate hunter seldom seen. The goshawk is a medium-sized, powerful bird of prey in the genus Accipiter, the true hawks. The same genus as the more frequently spotted sparrowhawk. In fact, the goshawk is like the big brother of the sparrowhawk. The Accipiters are often forest-dwelling, and so they are generally well-adapted, with short, rounded wings and a long tail for manoeuvrability. As juveniles, their plumage is brown, paler on their breast with darker streaks. The younger birds have striking yellow eyes that change over time. In most cases, those eyes darken to an amber colour. In some individuals, the eyes turn a blood red. Their plumage changes too, the adults acquiring their iconic silvery grey wings and black and white barring on their breasts. Their high-speed lives and ultimate predator reputation has inspired many to become avid fans, and one such fan is someone you might recognise.
They are just highly accomplished, brutal killing machines, never to be underestimated by any bird and mammal in the UK countryside. Their ferocity, is immediately apparent when you see their chrome yellow eyes, those piercing eyes. Everything about the bird has been tailored by evolution to shape it into the ultimate woodland assassin, basically. And it's that purity of form and purpose which I think draws me to goshawks and always has done.
Chris Packham is a naturalist, television presenter, filmmaker, photographer and tireless advocate for the natural world. But you knew that already. As the president of the Hawk Conservancy Trust, and with a long-standing relationship with our work, Chris understands better than most how vital it is we do all we can to conserve birds of prey in the wild. But of all the species of bird of prey we work with, it's clear that goshawks are one of his all-time favourites.
Again, when I was a kid getting into birds of prey, they were a rarity beyond compare. I now live in an area where I'm surrounded by perhaps as many as 100 pairs of goshawks, so things have changed quite radically there. So again, when I was keeping birds of prey myself, the first goshawk that I saw and met belonged to Jim Chick, a colleague of Ashley's at the Trust. It was a 19-year-old Finnish female bird. It was a big goshawk. And I asked if I could photograph it, and he brought it out and put it on a bow perch in his garden, and it stared at me and the hairs on the back of my neck stood on end. It was terrifying. And I took some photographs, and one of them appeared on one of the earliest books that I wrote. It was a very, very beautiful bird. It was sometime after that, it would have been well into the 80s before I saw a glimpse of a wild goshawk, and many years before I was able to see them, you know, and get a proper view of them. They're very secretive. And even now, although I live within the circumference of perhaps 100 pairs of them, I don't get to see them as often as I'd like.
Both Chris and I have a history in working one-to-one with birds of prey. And as a member of the bird team here, it's clearly the best part of the job we do. Among those who train the birds, The true hawks, like goshawks and sparrowhawks, are infamous for being tricky to work with, and gaining the trust of either species is a real achievement. It's something I can proudly say I've managed to do. They can be suspicious, wary, and very selective about who they'll trust and when. The very first bird of my own I ever trained was a goshawk called Saxon. I can safely say that he taught me a great deal more than I ever expected.
Do you think many people know about the species? It seems like the peregrine takes that kind of iconic top spot of the most famous bird of prey, maybe a barn owl. Do you think many people know about goshawks?
No, I think they're so secretive. I mean, they are a very large bird. When you look at the size of them and you think of how active they have to be, they are a predator. They can't just, you know, sit in a tree all day. Their encounterability, their visibility is very, very low. They are very secretive. They tend to hunt primarily within woodland. They are shy of people. If I see them without looking for them, I invariably just get a glimpse of them flying away because I or my dogs have disturbed them whilst we're walking. So you have to actively go and look for goshawks. And that means principally in springtime when they're displaying. They are more apparent then. They perform quite ostentatious aerial displays above their breeding grounds. But of course, if you're standing in a wood, you can't see very well out of that wood. So you need to be on a hill overlooking woodland. And one of the famous places for goshawk displays is in the New Forest, a place called Acres Down. And people have been visiting that site since the 1980s when the first pairs appeared in the New Forest. And on a nice, clear, sunny, blue sky spring morning, those goshawks will get up and display and you'll get views of them. But the idea that you'll ever come face to face with a wild goshawk, at close range for any protracted period of time, it is fallacious. That doesn't happen. And so again, I think that adds to their cachet and allure because you know that you're going to go a lifetime without really meeting your hero or heroine too close in the flesh. You're never going to be able to go up and shake their hands. You know, it's always going to be like you're the back of the crowd at Wembley Arena and they're a little speck on the stage. You know, that's the way the goshawk is.
Yeah, I've had exactly the same experience of being, I know somewhere in the vicinity there's a goshawk nest, but just seen a flash of grey through the trees and off they go. And all the corvids locally shouting their heads off in alarm call. And you're absolutely right there. They're very tricky to spot for any length of time.
Yeah, I mean, I see their kills and, you know, in the woods and they can be fresh. You know, the down is still blowing on the breeze on the woodland path, or literally the pigeon still doesn't have rigor mortis. And I know that minutes before, you know, one of the most prized and perfect birds in the world has been bent over that carcass, ripping it to bits. But, you know, and it's probably out there in the trees behind that canopy, you know, squinting at me as I examine its kill and then leave it in place. And of course, they regularly return to their kill, so we should always leave them where they are.
Goshawks are the ultimate predator, and they have a huge range of prey items they might pursue, depending on its availability. Basically, if they can catch it, they will. Passerines, corvids and pigeons are always on the menu, especially for the smaller males. But rabbits and grey squirrels are among the other favourites. To become the optimal hunter, goshawks have had to adapt to have an incredible ability to navigate their woodland environment at high speed. They switch between two strategies of pursuit when it comes to keeping their prey locked in their sights. The first is the classic tail chase, attempting to use sheer speed and agility alone to outmaneuver and outrun their prey. But they're often smarter in their approach, adapting their flight and making split-second decisions to cut their prey off at the pass. They have to perceive, calculate, and then act at speeds of over 30 miles an hour in tight woodland environments, and sometimes they make mistakes.
They are ambush hunters when I see them. So one of the things they like to do is to sit and watch And they'll place themselves so that they are looking at thoroughfares of other, primarily birds, activity. So where I see them, we have a series of woodland rides, quite large paths cut through the woods, where it's easy for birds to fly. And birds are not silly. They won't fly through the tangle of branches and boughs. They will, you know, if they're commuting through a woodland, they will use the human cut paths. And pigeons are certainly, you know, not opposed to doing that. So one of the things they do, the goshawk will sit, not perhaps right on the side of the ride, but maybe a tree back from the side of the ride. And it will just watch pigeons flying backwards and forwards along that ride until it judges that there's one that's not sufficiently awake, and it will, you know, pursue it. So they're pursuit predators that aim to catch their prey largely by surprise. Mm,
they are these ultimate predators, aren't they? And yeah, we certainly have a bit of a reputation of being a maverick. That sometimes leads to mistakes. Living out in the wild is not easy. I know that in July of 2020, you encountered a bird in your own back garden and brought it along to the National Bird of Prey Hospital. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, we've been watching those birds. They'd built their nest very close to, well, right above a path in the woods where we walk. Only we were walking in the woods at that time. It's a piece of private woodland where I was living. And so they were undisturbed by us passing twice a day beneath the nest, but it did mean that we could keep an eye on what was going on. So we were watching the adults going to and fro, building it, and then we sort of avoided that path whilst they were incubating their eggs. When the young were visible on the nest, we'd go back and have a quick look at them before we moved on. And then eventually the young fledged. And when they fledged, they stick near the nest to start with. They'll use that as a feeding platform. They'll come back to it. But within a couple of weeks, they'll move away into the woods. And you'll hear them. They have quite a characteristic contact call. These are the young birds. And they'll be, the reason for that call is to say to the parents, I'm here, I'm in this bit of the woods now. So the parents are still feeding them. They'll fly in. So they'd move from one side of the woods to the other. There were two young that year. And one of them had moved quite close to the house. Anyway, one morning I was sat in the lounge typing away on the old laptop. I heard a tremendous thud on the window. And I thought, I feared that something had obviously flown into it. And I rushed out to get the surprise of my life, because lying on the ground was a young goshawk. I did note that it had quite a significant cut on its foot, which was old. It was in the process of healing. It hadn't been caused by the impact by the window. Anyway, so I put it in a cardboard box, and I thought, well, sometimes when birds fly into windows, you only need to give them half an hour in the quiet, and then you open the box and they fly away. But we put the box in the stables and left it, so it was poodle free. But it didn't, be in a position. It wasn't in a position where it was able to fly. So we took the obvious step of contacting the Bird of Prey Hospital and bringing it up. It was there for some time because it was carrying some older injuries, and the vets thought that it had probably sustained those whilst it was still in the nest, actually. It was emaciated, so it clearly wasn't being fed and it wasn't able to hunt for itself. So the trust kept it for some time, a few weeks, until the injuries had healed. No surgery was required on its toes, as it turned out, which was a good thing. It was, treated with antibiotics. All the infections were gone. And then the weight was built up. And Meg's had the enormous, my stepdaughter had the enormous privilege of releasing it back into the woods. So, yeah, that was quite something, really. Well, I say, never forget it. It was amazing to have to be able to play a small role in making sure that a wild goshawk got back to where it needed to be in the wild was fantastic.
Our historic relationship with these woodland predators has not always been a positive one. Largely as a result of persecution, the goshawks were all but extinct in the wild in the UK by the late 19th century. Today, goshawks can be found widespread throughout the UK, with strongholds in Wales, the north of England, and in pockets of southern England, like the New Forest. This is probably the result of trained birds being accidentally or deliberately released in the past into the wild by some individuals. By 2019, over 700 pairs have been recorded breeding here, and the current population is estimated to be in the region of 1,200 pairs. What a comeback! Some people, like Chris, are lucky enough to see these birds close to their home on a regular basis. The goshawk is closely protected in the UK by the Wildlife and Countryside Act of 1981. But that doesn't mean they have no threats. The same issues these birds faced in the past are still troublesome to them today, as Chris explains.
Well, unfortunately, they're still ruthlessly persecuted, just not so widespread as it was in the past. I mentioned that we've maybe got 100 pairs in the region of the New Forest here. There are other hotspots. Kildare Forest in the north has a really good population as well, of course. Parts of Wales have good populations of goshawks. And they are undoubtedly spreading, but they're not spreading as rapidly as they should, because they frequently will visit pheasant release pens, where they come into conflict with gamekeepers. And we see through, recoveries of dead birds, we see birds caught in, you know, traps where hidden cameras reveal that gamekeepers are still killing them. There's no ambiguity about this. This is not an unfounded accusation. Sometimes goshawks are satellite tracked, and we see that they disappear on estates where there are game shooting interests. So the persecution continues. It's not at the level it was in the past, thankfully. So they have managed to re-establish here, and they are beginning to spread. But I think there are whole areas of the UK which should have goshawks, but currently don't because of persecution. I mean, our cities, it's a shame. In urban Berlin, which is a very well, it's a wooded city, lots of parkland, mature trees, but they have 19 pairs of nesting goshawks. Wouldn't it be great if we had goshawks nesting in our capital city, London? And it could happen. There's plenty of grey squirrels and pigeons for them to eat. But they, at this point, they don't seem to have been able to reach those locations because they're basically persecuted before they get there. But we continue to try and rein in that persecution, draw attention to it, prosecute those whenever possible who are perpetuating it. And in the meantime, the goshawks are obviously doing well. They've gone from a handful of pairs to 100 round here, as I say. So they are, beginning to build populations which will be robust enough to hopefully at some point in the future see them present in most of our woodland communities. I mean, they do have an impact on those woodland communities. We've described how they are, profoundly powerful predators. They do tend to take out quite a few of the other predators. So they will feed on buzzards, young buzzards in the nest. They'll take out kestrels and sparrowhawks. In fact, there seems to be a relationship between the number of goshawks and the number of sparrowhawks in any area and where they live. But I think that we have to see this as a process of realignment. We took a bird entirely out of our ecosystems, and now it's come back. And many of us have grown up through a period where it was absent, and we thought that that was normal. We thought that the numbers of other species and the way they behaved was normal. But in fact, it was abnormal because we were missing the goshawk and other species too. So as and when these animals come back, we have to be tolerant of the fact that, it may be going back to like it was before we could remember it, because we couldn't remember it when there were goshawks, widely spread over the UK. In fact, by the 1850s, in many areas, they'd already gone. They hung on until the 1910s in very few isolated areas. So they were functionally extinct in the UK a long time before the turn of the last century. So we went a good 100 years, 130, 40 years without significant numbers of goshawks. So we're now having to learn to live with them again. As conservationists, part and parcel of our mission is not only to get the birds back, but to get people's minds back. We have to, win the hearts and minds of the naysayers and bring them on board for these types of conservation projects. It can be quite difficult. It's not an easy thing to do in the UK for all sorts of socio-political reasons, but we keep at it. And it is remarkable that we have, this year had ospreys breeding for the first time in more than 200 years in the south of England in Poole Harbour through a reintroduction project. White-tailed eagles bred for the first time in the UK, sorry, in the south of England, again, this summer. It looks like there'll be, potentially several pairs of those nesting next year. I mean, these are astonishing feats of conservation.
You mentioned about how it's part of our role as conservationists and advocates for wildlife to try to bring everybody with us where we possibly can. How important do you think the role of places like the Hawk Conservancy Trust is in conserving birds of prey in general?
Well, I think it's incredibly important because underlying, you know, its core values is education. And people come to see things, they want to engage with them, they want to be able to admire their beauty close up. But the trust is wise to know that rather than just, you know, stand and gawp at them, which was, you know, maybe the idea of a menagerie in the Victorian times, these days it's all about education. And every aspect of what the trust does is there to impart, you know, information and knowledge to the visitor. So some of the flying displays have highly imaginative elements. You know, we have, you know, secretary birds kicking rubber snakes, we have fires going on, and all sorts of things. But there's a reason for every single part of that. It's not theatre. It's these things have been devised to show people the animal's natural behaviour and talk about the how they exist in their habitats. And then, of course, behind that, having hooked people with the bird's beauty and the imaginative displays, et cetera, conservation comes into play. And the message behind everything is very much that this is a group of animals which have suffered, not just in the UK, but all over the world for a great many reasons. And they need conserving. So engagement, education, conservation is very much the sort of the practice of the trust, and that's essential. If people don't know, then they won't act. And we're at a time when very clearly we have to act because we're losing our, you know, UK wildlife, not just birds of prey, but our UK wildlife at a catastrophic and astonishing rate. So I think that, you know, the work done by the trust goes beyond developing a fascination and affinity for birds of prey. It's about getting people to love life and want to protect that life. And we sincerely hope, of course, that people come and then they come back and they bring their friends. And then when they leave and people like me go banging on the door, campaigning about something, it's part of the fuel which will get them out of bed to stand up and be counted when it comes to conservation.
Now, we may have invited Chris onto Nature's A Hoot to talk about goshawks, but it's no secret that he's an enormous fan of raptors. So I'm interested to know the answer to our regular question on the show. Chris, if you were a bird of prey, which species do you think you'd be, and why?
Well, it would be, if I wanted to live a long, healthy, exciting life, then you might think I would choose goshawk. I've already mentioned that certainly in captivity, they can live into their 20s. I imagine in the wild, they would struggle to reach those figures sometimes, certainly if they were being persecuted. But nevertheless, you know, to be something as bold and as dashing as a goshawk, it is tempting. However, I wouldn't choose a bird of prey, in fact. I'd give anything to be a swallow for 5 minutes. On one of those days when they're speeding about above a lake or a pond and they're dipping in to bathe and drink, and they've got that beautiful electric blue plumage, and they're so super fast, and their sort of aerial alacrity is second to none. I mean, I know that, you know, hobbies, another bird of prey, falcon, small migratory falcon we have in the UK, they will take certainly young swallows. Occasionally, they'll take adult swallows too, of course, but that wouldn't put me off. I would be quite happy to be that swallow that dives about above the lake in sunshine, flashing that electric blue, dipping into that water for 5 minutes, only to be taken out by a hobby. That would be my perfect life and death, basically, as a bird.
And a yearly trip to, you know, to Africa as well. I mean,
well, or not. I mean, some of them are now overwintering in the UK. We had as many as 100 swallows overwintering in the UK last winter because it's become so mild here that they're not bothering to go to South Africa. After all, why fly all of that way if you can stay at home and still eat insects here? That won't work every winter, of course, for those birds, but we are seeing changes in migration patterns due to climate changes. But I'd be a swallow. There's no question about that. And if I had to be something all of my life and I was going to live a long life, then I might choose non-breeding male jackdaw. There are a cohort of male jackdaws who basically are just not interested in breeding. And what they do is they just hang around, making a nuisance of themselves in National Trust properties, raiding the, you know, the extortionately priced cafes, nicking the carrot cake off of the small side plates. And they live a long time. And jackdaw, I like jackdaws very much, very colourful characters, very intelligent birds. And yeah, not getting involved in the breeding process, having to make a nest, feed those youngsters, all that mess, no thanks. Just hanging around, you know, terrorising pensioners for bits of cake, lovely.
Now, technically, Chris didn't play by the rules here. Both the jackdaw and the swallow are predatory birds, but they're not, of course, birds of prey. But it seems to me that Chris's explanation was so persuasive that I think I'll let him off. In any case, I reckon that being the Trust President offers its privileges, and I wasn't going to argue with him. And though I was surprised that Chris didn't go for his goshawk as a bird that he would most like to be, I can easily see why. The life of a goshawk may be exciting, but it's not simple, or without its dangers. Thank you for the suggestions that all of you sent in to us after our last episode when we asked you the same question. It's great to hear from you, and if you want to get involved with the show, you can always send us an email here, podcast@hawkconservancy.org, or you can answer some of our questions about what you think about the show over on Spotify.
Chris, thank you so much for talking to us all about goshawks, and your almost unrivaled passion for the natural world is infectious. So thank you so much, and we'll hope to see you soon at the Trust.
I'm sure you will. Trust does great work. I'm a keen, lifelong supporter. It's always a pleasure to come. I would urge any listener to visit the Trust at the first opportunity. It's got a great cafe as well, I have to tell you. The staff are fantastic, always ready to engage, there to answer any question. You don't have to be an expert to go to the Trust at all. I always come away, you know, having seen something remarkable, and that's great, but more importantly, learn something new. So, Tom, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Chris. We certainly will.
They're a bird of secretive nature, but with a fearsome reputation as the ultimate avian predator. They're hard to spot. Sometimes a grey-white blur is all you get to see when you're searching for them. But that somehow makes that want to watch one in the wild all the more alluring. They always leave you wanting more. I myself have seen them darting around the woodland before disappearing away, mewing to each other around a potential nest site. Corvids erupting into a panicked cacophony of cawing. This species is the epitome of what a successful bird of prey looks like. Sleek, black-barred feathers, a piercing, orange-eyed glare, and powerful talons to seal the deal when the hunt is over. Look up predator in the dictionary, and in my humble opinion, there should simply be a printed image of the goshawk. I'd like to thank my guest, Hawk Conservancy Trust President Chris Packham, for his support in putting this episode together and for making the time to talk to a fellow goshawk fan and bird nerd. If you'd like more information about our conservation and research projects, you can find loads more on our website, hawk-conservancy.org. We've now got a catalogue of episodes of Nature's a Hoot, so if you're just joining us, why not check out those others? Lots more bird of prey content can also be found on our social media pages. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, and perhaps consider leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts.